fear is not real. The only place that fear can exist is in our thoughts of the future. It is a product of our imagination, causing us to fear things that do not at present and may not ever exist. That is near insanity. Do not misunderstand me. Danger is very real, but fear is a choice. We are all telling ourselves a story.
You're listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. 100% listener-supported radio. Reporting the danger, unafraid, right here, where information never sleeps. Revolution. Revolution. Radio!
Are you coming to the train, led by a man who wants to break the chains? Establishment is terrified, they can't control his reign. Let's meet this year on the Trump train. Are you coming to the train, where brave men called out for a wall built by crane? Media is terrified, they can't control his reign. Let's meet this year on the Trump train. Are you coming to the train, where brave men called out the fools who lead in vain? Lobbyists are terrified, they can't control our reign. Let's meet this year on the Trump train. Are you coming to the train? Wear a hat of hope, side by side with me. Make America great again, break the chains. Let's meet this year on the Trump train.
And we are going to be respected by the world again and not laughed at like we're all a bunch of stupid people being led by incompetent politicians. It's not going to go on any longer.
Are you coming to the train to take our great country back again? Join a revolution, break the chains. Let's meet this year on a Trump train.
We're going to win at the borders. We're going to win, and we're going to keep winning. And we are going to make America great again, greater than ever before. Greater than ever before.
February 11th, 2024, you're listening to Revolution Radio, the best radio network on the internet, and this is Dr. Johnny keeping the truth alive, and I kindly ask you to please be generous with your contribution to this network at freedomslips.org, Revolution Radio. Dr. Johnny gives every month through the Patreon account that I started, and you can set one up too. Just set one up and automatically donate $5 or more per month. It's so easy. And so get a Patreon account today on freedomslips.org and keep Dr. Johnny on the air. And if you don't donate to Revolution Radio, please give a generous donation to Dr. Johnny. All the hosts do not get paid, and we've really been working hard to bring you the truth and the news you can use so you can have a better life for you and your family. You are now connected to the Master Survivor Beyond PhD Command Center, where Dr. Johnny with the Bald Eagle Eye is keeping a vigilant watch on Washington, D.C., our country, and our solar system. That's right. You are now listening to the Master Survivor, bringing you hope, health, and happiness but most important of all, the truth about our world and providing the tools to help you survive and thrive. I am your host, Johnny Delirious, laboratory naturopathic doctor, best-selling author, master survivor, and virus recovery expert. Well, folks, anybody in Colorado should listen up, because right now the Colorado legislators, state legislators, has introduced a bill that could see a pet tax imposed on every non-livestock animal in the state of Colorado. The bill, HB 24-1163, sponsored by Democrat Regina English, boy, she's a real beauty, requires all pet owners to register their animals in a state-run system, of course, all on your smartphone, with fees that critics are calling exorbitant and unnecessary, and Dr. Johnny will comment that they're totally ridiculous. These draconian measures disguised as welfare, the proposed pet animal registration system under the Pet Animal Registration Act stipulates annual registration for pets with a sliding scale of fees that seems to punish those without the means to pay. At $8.50 for pets with a designated caregiver, $16 for unneutered or unspayed pets with a caregiver, and a hefty $25 for pets without a caregiver, the financial burden could be significant for multiple pet households. Just think of veterinarians, not to mention breeders and sellers who may face the tax for each animal over 6 months old in their care. This fee structure applies to a broad spectrum of animals. I can't make this stuff up, folks. I'm just reporting the news, so don't shoot the piano player if you don't like the music. But if you're in Colorado, you better listen up. This fee applies to a broad spectrum of animals ranging from dogs, cats, reptiles, amphibians, fish, fin creatures, you know, invertebrates, guppies, leaving no pet owner untouched. This fee structure applies to a broad spectrum of animals ranging from dogs, cats, reptiles, and amphibians, and even invertebrates. Consider the financial burden on a family with a diverse array of pets. Say, 100 aquarium fish could cost the owner up to $2,500 annually without designated caregivers. A menagerie of 20 assorted pets, including a cat, dog, hamster, birds, and several reptiles and fish, maybe a hamster, and see animal taxes ranging from $170 to $500. Even a child's ant farm is not exempt from this sweeping legislation, potentially introducing a significant financial strain for something as simple as keeping an ant farm. You know, if little Billy has his ant farm, you could be charged with a tax. And guess what? They're going to have the pet patrol come around to your house to investigate inside your house about what kind of pets you're harboring. Oh, what's behind that? What's in the screen fenced in area that we can't see? Is that another dog? I mean, you know. So, a Department of Agriculture tasked with creating and maintaining an online pet animal registration system with stiff penalties for non-compliance, including fines up to $100 per unregistered animal. This could mean that an unaware pet owner with unregistered aquarium fish would face fines up to $10,000. Folks, I have a friend that they have a tank, an aquarium with guppies. And there's, I don't know, there's hundreds of guppies in there because they keep breeding. They're like rabbits. Just think, if someone has rabbits, how they breed. The bill's intent is to connect pets with their owners or designated caregivers during emergencies. While this goal may seem laudable, the method attacks has been met with skepticism. The state's overreach into private lives with this registration system has pet owners questioning the true motives behind the bill. The additional financial burden may discourage potential pet owners from adopting animals in need, potentially creating a greater strain on animal shelters. With the hearing set for February 22nd at the state capitol in Colorado, opponents of the bill are gearing up for a battle. They argue that this bill is a thinly veiled attempt to revenue collection rather than a genuine effort to improve animal welfare. By imposing this pet tax, Colorado is setting a precedent that animal companionship is a luxury afforded only to those willing to pay for government surveillance of their furry, feathered, or fin friends. Dr. Johnny's here to tell all Coloradans to fight this and keep it from passing. Just another way of big government reaching their grimy little hands into your pocket and stealing your wallet. Of course, they haven't stopped in fighting everything that they've got, you know, trying to take Trump out. But we hear Ronna McDaniel, you know, chair of the RNC, has resigned. Well, Trump fired her, okay? Let's just get right to the point. He fired Ronna McDaniel for not investigating voter fraud. The chairperson, RNC chairperson Ronna McDaniel, a true rhino in my opinion, announced last Tuesday that she will resign following South Carolina's state primary later this month. Although her statement lacked an explanation, pundits have speculated broadly that President Donald J. Trump lost confidence in McDaniel's ability to manage the RNC coffers at a time when every campaign dollar counts. And while this was most accurate, there is more than meets the eye. As reported previously on this show, McDaniel refused to investigate allegations of voter fraud in the Iowa caucuses after White Hats through an intermediary provided what they called a substantive proof that Nikki Haley staffers, known only as Joan, had tried to buy votes for her boss with a slew of $1,000 prepaid gift cards. McDaniel was giving a video of Joan circulating the cards. The testimony of two U.S. Army CID warrant officers and copies of Joan's bank records illustrating she was financially irresponsible individual, never had a balance of more than $500 in her checking account. Sounds like Dr. Johnny. The White Hat's inescapable inference and conclusion was that Haley had bought the cards and given them to Joan to distribute on her behalf. According to the CID spokesman, McDaniel called for evidence frivolous and flimsy because Joan accepted sole responsibility for handling and handing out the gift cards to bring light and love to Iowans. Jones still won't say who, if anyone, got her the cards or if she did the purchasing. She told our investigators that it was none of their damn business, and she's not talking. Obviously, we haven't looked to beat the confession out of her because, well, you know, we're still investigating. She doesn't seem to mind being held in indefinite detention. She's not what we'd call your standard deep state asset or our standard captured arrest. And tried as you might, we can't bargain a confession from tying Haley into the picture, although Haley's involvement is the ultimate logical answer. And Ronald McDaniel said, without confession from Joan or Nikki Haley, the RNC can't have the time to waste on baseless claims, the CID source said. Her dismissing the evidence prompted CID to change course, and they forwarded all their findings and McDaniel's response to Donald J. Trump at Mar-a-Lago. Well, let's just say Donald Trump wasn't happy, and that's an understatement, and he said he would summon her for a meeting. My source at Mar-a-Lago confirmed that an unhappy and disgruntled McDaniel arrived at Mar-a-Lago this past Monday, February 5th, and received a chewing out that would have enervated the soul of any robust person, which she was not. President Trump, my source said, tore McDaniel a new sphincter, to put it in proper language, firing volleys of vitriolic messages that left McDaniel stunned and on the verge of tears. You know, Bronx, you know, Trump is from the Bronx, and he grew up in Queens, and, you know, he can make a sailor blush if he wanted to, you know. So the president demanded an explanation for what she had ignored, why she ignored CID's conclusions, and she meekly attributed her inaction to CID's meritless data. She reportedly told Trump, since you beat her in Iowa by a landslide, what's the big deal anyway, she said. Well, you're bad at what you do. Very bad, said Trump. What happened? I misjudge you in a big way, Trump said. And I'm just giving you the partial answer. The misjudgment wouldn't have come in December 2016 when Trump picked McDaniel at his recommendation to replace Priebus. And at the time, and until recent events, she seemed like a promising replacement. In 2020, she and RNC identified voter fraud and the general election and worked laboriously to overturn Biden's stolen victory in 2022. And she argued on the behalf of the innocent patriots whom the criminal Biden regime imprisoned for peacefully visiting the Capitol on January 6th, correctly characterizing their presence as a lawful citizens engaged in constitutionally protected political discourse. Nevertheless, her rejection of Jag's results eclipsed any earlier benevolence, and Donald Trump calamorously voiced his disapproval and said, Rona, I'm not calling you a traitor, but you're bad at what you do, and you're out. You get out the nice way, or you get out the hard way. And you think and know what that hard way would be, and it won't look good for you. The nice way is a graceful resignation, President Trump didn't describe the hard way, but it's safe to assume McDaniel didn't want to find out either and incur Trump's wrath. So she resigned. Well, you know, another one down, we'll get and do better from now on because, you know, she's related to Romney and Romney's another rhino, and you've heard all this stuff, and even the rhinos are going against everybody trying to protect the border. And you've heard a lot about what's going on the border, but you may not have heard the criminal Biden regime has secretly displaced undercover FEMA agents at the southern border, according to Eric Smith's office. On Friday, February 2nd, White Hat officer embedded within the Texas Military Department spotted and later apprehended FEMA Regional 6 Supervisor Tony Robinson at the Auto Rio Hotel, a budget hotel less than 600 feet from the Eagle Pass in Texas. Robinson first seen loitering around the motel parking lot earlier that Friday, although he wore a dark suit and tie rather than the typical FEMA battle gear, he was immediately recognized by Marine Corps officers, also in plain clothes at the time, who had coincidentally booked a room at the same hotel as Robinson. He stood out like a sore thumb, a source said, at least to the White Hats familiar with his criminal malfeasance. The 6'2" medium build Caucasian with a smattering of short gray hair had ascended to the position of Regional 6, encompassing Texas, Louisiana, New Mexico, Oklahoma, and Arkansas supervisor in June of 2023. At the time, Robinson praised FEMA Director Dina Craswell for elevating his station as he faithfully fulfilled FEMA's edict since 1987 and called the promotion long overdue. He became a rapidly glowing blip on the White Hat radar in August of 2023 when U.S. Marines battling FEMA forces in Maui met Robinson on the battlefield, though he eluded capture. White Hat sources said they had evidence linking Robinson to a wanton slaughter of countless Hawaiians who perished to FEMA's gunfire and flamethrowers, which Robinson was all a part of. General Smith issued arrest on site orders, and in fact, we thought we might have nailed him when we took him down, when we took down their plane leaving Maui. But he must have not been on it, and it was sheer stroke of luck that one of our guys noticed him at Eagle Pass, Texas, this past week or so. The officer, he added, discreetly snapped and sent photos of Robinson to U.S. Army Cyber Command for verification, and their response confirmed his suspicions as Cyber Command returned a 96.5 match, conclusive, though, even though the officer to confront and arrest was Robinson for treason. The officer, however, felt it prudent to orchestrate Robinson's capture with other White Hats in Eagle Pass. Roundtable discussions led to a disturbing possibility. Robinson would not have traveled the border alone. FEMA is brood, blight, and a plague of locusts. If he was there, he had support. These FEMA types are cowards, and they don't ever travel solo, my source said. White Hat leaders asked Cyber Command to assess the guest registries of all hotels and motels within a 50-mile radius of Eagle Pass. So they got everybody's name and number, and an alarming number of John Smiths and Jane Does, 50 in all, must have thought that illegal-ridden border city was inviting an exciting wintertime vacation vista, for they all rented rooms and leased vehicles for precisely 60 days. It's a FEMA infestation, my source said. The revelation led the White Hats to believe that FEMA had unknowingly borrowed their playbook and, you know, started wearing the Texas National Guard uniforms, just like our White Hats did. But hey, let's get real, folks. Every time there's a huge border crossing, there's lots of kids. And whenever there's lots of kids, FEMA's there to nab them. It's just plain, let's just cut right to the chase and just tell the truth. FEMA grabs kids, period. And they steal from patriots all their guns and gold and everything else. And then, you know, in all these damaged areas. Ah, so good. As reported previously, White Hats on the border have donned uniforms of Texas National Guard to display solidarity and conceal their identities and numbers. At the same time, FEMA personnel had insulated themselves among federal border patrol agents wearing their uniforms and insignia, evidenced by the Caucasian agents wearing name tags saying Hernandez. when they weren't really, you know, Latino. He said, I don't want to sound racist, but, you know, when they're white as Casper the Friendly Ghost, and they're definitely not Gomez, Hernandez, or Gutierrez, they were intermixed with Border Patrol, and they smelled like FEMA, my source said, all the way. Now we know where they are, what they and Robinson are doing here. We can be sure they're up to no good. The goal of the day was to get Robinson and not make a huge scene. White hats, he said, tail Robinson to the outskirts of Shelby Park, where he conspicuously glazed over the Rio Grande through a pair of binoculars, and now and then mingled with Border Patrol officers. But they could have been FEMA agents for reasons unknown. We don't know which is which at that time, but we do now. Over the several hours, he had repositioned himself. He drove from the park to Eagle Pass International Bridge and back, and the sun set. We hope in his car. We saw him in his car, and he started back to his hotel, unaware that white hats were on his tail and lying in waiting at the Auto Rio Inn. No sooner had he parked than white hat officer who first identified him and approached him with a very conspicuous smile and said, "Hey, Tony, what are you doing here? We missed you in Maui." And boy, immediately Robinson reached for his pistol, but stopped when he saw a myriad of pinpoints of red lights moving across his chest. "You really shouldn't do that," the white hat officer said. "It would be unfortunate for you." Robinson surrendered his sidearm and was taken into custody. As you might have guessed, he hasn't said why he was at the border. He's being interrogated, and he's sent to Gitmo. One thing's for sure, his capture closes the chapter of one of FEMA's most infamous death spots. Only one worse than Robinson is his boss, Alejandro Mayorkas. For the second time in U.S. history, U.S. voted 209-201 to place impeachment articles of the cabinet secretary here, the Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas, before the relevant committee, which in turn voted to send impeachment to the full House with a vote unlikely in February. But does it really matter at this point? One sense of impeachment is so serious, and finding illegal violations all over the board, just a long list of misdemeanors and a long list of high crimes, more than half a dozen being treasonous without question. Having read the articles, they alleged that Mayorkas violated his oath to support and defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic, and to, well, and faithfully discharge duties of his office. He has willfully and systematically refused to comply with federal immigration laws. The articles allege that his abdication of duty raises an unlawful conduct as a result, which millions of aliens have illegally entered the United States. Millions, I mean, it is literally up to 8 million now, and just in the past year or so, an annual basis in unlawfully remaining inside the United States. They say his refusal to obey the law violates the Constitution and separation of powers with the executive and enforcing laws and not enforcing laws passed by Congress, signed by a prior president, upheld by judiciary that threatens our national security, already yielding dire impact on communities across our country. Specifically, he is alleged to have willfully refused a complied detention mandate. And they're so, I'm not going to go into his list of crimes. It's a huge rap sheet, folks. But the article impeachment tribute his causes was resulting Mayorkas' decision, presumably made by his own. And despite clear evidence that this willful and systematic refusal to comply with the law was significantly contributed to unprecedented levels of illegal entries, the increased control of the southwest border by drug cartels, and the imposition of enormous costs to states and localities affected this influx of aliens. Mayorkas has continually, in his refusal to comply with the law, and therefore enacted a grave detriment of the interests of the United States. And, of course, it goes on and on. The Congress notes that Mayorkas oversees the jump from 11 terror watch list intercepts to over of 2017 and to 2020 to 98 in 2022 to 169 in 2022, and already in just this past month, 49 in 2024, terror is now a real threat. American communities have been devastated by the dramatic growth of illegal entries, said the articles. And, you know, this downgraded public safety to the point where the breach of public trust by Mayorkas has knowingly made false statements, knowingly obstructed the oversight to confiscate results of his willful and systematic refusal to comply with the law. So, like I said, there's more to it of his crimes, but it did take a genius to figure out why he is a traitor. And this White House, this president, this vice president, all serve them and bear responsibility for unlawful, deceptive, and ineffective cabinet member, by that being Mayorkas. But finally, we know, so he was arrested, and even though his impeachment is, you know, impending, but he's already arrested, so what difference does it make at this point? So he's going to Gitmo too. Now, folks, I want to jump to something here that Rebecca Weber of AMAC calls the most dangerous lie, okay? And while all these other things are going on with Tucker interviewing Putin and, you know, different things happening at the border, all the stuff about Biden getting taken down, all these are real distractions. What you don't realize is happening behind the scenes is the dystopian nightmare seizing America. This is from Rebecca Weber from AMAC, and you know, that's the Association of Mature American Citizens, and particularly a lot of this information comes from the Heritage Foundation. These are facts, so I want to read some of her article here to you, because this dystopian nightmare, this most dangerous lie, is seeping in and taking control of America. A growing number of states are now directing public schools to help young students make gender transitions. In certain cases, educators are even being mandated to keep such information secret from the parents. I can't make this stuff up, folks. I'm just reporting to you what's going on. In 2023, in June, the New York State Education Department published new requirements for serving transgender and gender expansive students, TGE. The guidelines instruct teachers to lie to parents if a child wants to socially transition at school without their parents' consent. Only the student knows whether it's safe to share their identity with caregivers, this New York State Education Department document explains. Schools should be mindful that some TEG, that's transgender expansive students, do not want or cannot have their parents or guardians know about their transitional or transgender status. If a student named Kevin wants to be called Kimmy, but he does not want his parents to know, the document instructs the teachers to call her Kimmy in class and use the she, her pronouns at school. While calling home for any reason, teachers should use the name Kevin with he or him pronouns. New York has also recommended that all schools adapt the National Sex Education Standards, which introduce gender identity in kindergarten and teach children about puberty blockers by fifth grade. I can't make this stuff up, folks. This is happening. Elementary school is no place for these conversations. It's predatory behavior to talk to children about sex and gender changes behind the backs of their parents, even more so to twist the truth in such perverse ways and lie to their parents that maybe their, you know, Kevin is now Kimmy. Okay, this is what Rebecca's saying here and what they've reported at the Heritage Foundation. Tragically, New York is not the only state that is propagating these harmful lies to children. Washington State and Oregon have enacted legislation that enables children as young as 15 to transition from their biological sex, which includes hormone injections, puberty blockers, and irreversible destructive surgeries. Illinois has mandated that all public schools teach students from kindergarten through second grade about gender identity. These so-called gender affirmation policies are a direct assault on our children. They endanger the health, safety, and future of our entire generation. Studies universally show that children are not neurologically advanced enough to make life-altering decisions. The prefrontal cortex, which is responsible for rational decision-making, is not fully developed until well into a person's 20s, which leaves even older teenagers reliant on the highly emotional and reactive part of the mind known as the amygdala. Children need years of experience before conceptualizing the connection between cause and effect. Yet, these far-left gender policies confuse and abuse children when they're most vulnerable and can't make those types of decisions and connections. Well, this is a fight to protect our children, folks. Unfortunately, Republican lawmakers have worked without uncharacteristic speed to stop these egregious practices before they are widespread in the United States. Thus far in 2023, at least 10 Republican states have passed bills to ban or significantly restrict the use of puberty blockers or cross-sex hormones and mutilated gender assessment surgeries for minors. Thank God. While many Democratic leaders continue to aggressively pursue gender-affirming legislation, other Western nations have actually pulled back from such policies. Five European countries, the United Kingdom, Sweden, Finland, Norway, and France, have recently reversed course after allowing gender reassignment for years, urging caution now due to the severe health risks for the minors. They now go, no, let's stop now. So those countries, United Kingdom, Sweden, Finland, and Norway, and France, who once had this type of gender reaffirming surgeries and things and allowed that, they don't allow that anymore. In June of 2023, the United Kingdom's National Health Service issued a major decision to restrict the prescription of puberty blockers to clinical trials. The directive stated there is not enough evidence to support their safety or clinical effectiveness as a routinely available treatment, and that They should only be accessed as part of the research. The NHS, the National Health Security decision, was made in response to an alarmingly sharp rise in referrals for gender transition therapy, a dramatic change in the population of patients from predominantly biological males to predominantly biological females, the high prevalence of serious pre-existing mental health conditions among referrals, and a scarcity of evidence for any positive effects of gender transition therapy. Instead of continuing to promote harmful transgender therapy for children, American lawmakers can learn from Europe's cautionary tale. More than five or six countries are now speaking out against it and made it illegal. Even in the United States, where until recently it was uncommon for doctors to offer teenagers puberty blockers, hormone drugs, and sex change surgeries, the evidence of the detrimental effects is quickly mounting. It's no good, folks. American parents, teenagers, and even former workers in the industry are beginning to courageously band together and speak out about their own truly horrific experiences. Jamie Reed, self-described as a queer who is politically to the left of the Bernie Sanders, way left, worked as a caseworker in Washington University Transgender Center at St. Louis Children's Hospital for 4 years. Last November, she left the clinic after she concluded that the medical treatments had life-altering consequences that would permanently harm vulnerable patients, she said. In February of this year, she published an article in the Free Press warning parents about the morality and medically appalling practice. The morally and medically appalling practice, she detailed case after case of medical manipulation of parents and children, as well as irreversible damaging effects of hormonal and surgical transitions. Parents have confirmed that their experiences were as horrifying as what Reed described. One mother, Caroline, brought her son to the center when he was 14 years old. He had flipped between different labels of gender identity and was curious about being transgender. He had been experiencing psychological distress, had lots of traumas, and Carolyn was told that a puberty blocker would help. When she voiced hesitations, the psychologist responded in front of Caroline's son with alarming and misleading statistics about suicides among children that were not allowed to transition. So they scared her to death to getting the blockers, just like they scare people to death to get those vaccines. Same thing. Carolyn felt that she had no choice but to agree to the puberty blocker. As she put it, it's like being implied that if I don't okay this, and I don't care, then I don't care about my kid, and it kills himself. And if he kills himself, well, then that's my fault. While she had hoped that the puberty blocker would alleviate his son's depression, in reality, her son became increasingly depressed and anxious. He struggled to keep up in school and even got out of bed and became suicidal. At the onset of all these disturbing side effects, Carolyn demanded the blocker's immediate removal. However, the clinic's refusal, and they refused, and to this day, the puberty blocker continues to wreak havoc on the physical and emotional well-being of her son, of her teenage boy, without the consent of his mother. So his you know, the boy can go there and keep getting the puberty blockers. She doesn't know a thing about it. And, of course, he doesn't get her permission to do that either. Sadly, Carolyn's story is not unique. While gender-affirming care advocating claim that transition treatments lower the risk of suicide among trans youths, the evidence does not bear this out. In fact, a Swedish report found that suicide rate for fully transitioned adults was 19 times higher than that of the rest of the population, suggesting that gender reassessment is not an effective treatment to reduce suicide. Even teenagers who have undergone these treatments are now worrying their peers. Sydney Wright, now a youthful adult in Georgia, has bravely shared her own story. As a high school student, Sydney was insecure about her attraction to girls. After watching a number of transgender success stories on Instagram, she began seeing gender therapists just after her 19th birthday, and she received testosterone hormones. Within months, she gained 50 pounds, became pre-diabetic, and was deeply depressed. No one encouraged her to stop until one day her grandfather talked to her. As Sydney recalls, there was my grandpa, the man I respect the most, pleading with me through tears. I just can't tell you. I just couldn't tell him no, she said. That was a saving grace that saved my life. I would have to let this treatment kill me before admitting I'd screwed up. But his intervention, my grandpa, saved my life, she said. I don't know which call. Anyway, Sydney's heartbreaking story powerfully illustrates the critical role that grandparents play in supporting their grandchildren. As grandparents, we often don't see how our relationships with our grandchildren build up their confidence and help them know that they're truly loved. But through our example and our encouragement, we can teach our grandchildren to find security in their own true identity as beloved children of God. Every child needs to know that he or she is loved. It's natural for teenagers to struggle with such insecurities and search for acceptance. No one wants to be an outsider. Yet, major left-wing institutions are trying to sell teenagers that they will be happier if they change their bodies, transition God, you know, change the bodies that God gave them, and if they become someone they're not. Since a lie has taken many forms throughout history, but this current push to force gender transitions on teenagers is a particularly cruel lie at best. So-called gender-affirming care is medical malpractice. Plain and simple, Dr. Johnny agrees, such efforts prey upon our children when they are most vulnerable. We must expose the left's gender transition propaganda. Every American will play a crucial role in this effort, but parents and grandparents have a particularly special responsibility to protect their children and grandchildren from such a dangerous lie. So, folks, I just want to give you a little update on this. And this is from February 2nd, this is from the state of Maine. Transgender bill is a part of a larger scheme proposed by California advocacy group. Every now and then we get excellent news on the cultural war front. And so I wanted to show you about this bill that Maine and House and Senate killed, the now infamous LD 1736, a bill that would have incentivized and protected trafficking of minors into the state for the purpose of gender transition. If true, you know, if this would have passed, they would bring all the kids to Maine and have them gender transition. The true madness of this bill, which was among other shocking revelations, may have enshrined into law the right of the government to take custody out of state children whose parents were opposed to transgender ideology. Originally, the bill was expected to pass, but it was killed by an unanimous bipartisan 12-0 vote. What happened? Well, you know what happened. Parents and people who care about their kids happened, and they objected to the main lawmakers who heard from the people around the country as the issue was discussed on social media, talk radio, and cable news. Suddenly, the light was turned on, and the left's narrative was exposed as a fraud, and all their euphemisms and newspeak meant to obfuscate even a lie the bill's true intention. The Maine Beacon, which is a newspaper up there, reported Democrats who had initially backed the bill stated on Thursday that it included unnecessary language for the purpose of safeguarding transgender health care in Maine, leading to their decision to oppose it. Do you mean language allowing the state to take custody of children if their parents disagree with the leftist ideology and telling the courts and law enforcement to ignore if their child is kidnapped and be trafficked to another state, the state of Maine? That language? Oh, yeah, this is what got their attention. While this particular version of the bill is dead, expected to return like the Frankenstein monster, they will change a few words here and there in sentences and stitch it all together and make a more beautiful salad. So their goals remain the same, is to weaponize children and into the transgender issue to further their horrific, dangerous goal of expanded bureaucratic state of uncontested control of our nation's children. I already told you how they're trying to control our pets in Colorado. Now they're trying to control our children. Putting this bill out of its leftist misery came as quite a surprise to the left for good reason. Leftist extremists had quite a run in Maine passing bills eliminating certain parental rights over their minor children, and they expected them winning a streak to continue. But in their coverage, they couldn't continue here. And the bill's failure, the gay magazine Advocate, wasn't shy about admitting this. And I quote, "The bill had been a top priority for transgender rights advocates. This session, viewed as an extension of last year's legislation progress that allowed 16 to 17-year-olds in Maine to access gender-affirming care without parental consent or notification in line with Maine's laws on abortion and contraception for minors." So they're all saying how wonderful it is. While the defeat of Maine's bill is good news in of itself, it also must serve as inspiration for our advocacy for children to continue. The bill wasn't organic, nor was it one-off. It was part of a nationally organized effort by leftist entities to use children in their grab for power. In this case of transgender ideology, the coalition of California-based entities decided to metastasize their policies and destroy communities. On May 3, 2022, the LGBTQ Victory Institute sent out a press release crowing about their new plan and coalition to push transfuse, what they call transfuse laws, across the country. They announced LGBTQ Victory Institute, California State Senator Scott Wiener, Equity California, and Planned Parenthood affiliates of California today announced a national queer lawmaker lead rollout of trans refuse state legislation in 16 states. While these laws look different in each state, the objectives are the same, to shield trans kids and their families from penalties when seeking gender-affirming care to the greatest extent possible. The announcement today, 21 LGBTQ lawmakers representing 16 states publicly committed to introduce trans refuge bills into Colorado, Connecticut, Florida, Georgia, Illinois, Kansas, Kentucky, Maine, Michigan, New Hampshire, New Mexico, Oregon, Rhode Island, Vermont, Washington, and West Virginia, one wonders, did the voters of the targeted states sign up for their elected LGBT lawmakers to make policy based on what the local constituents want, or did they choose instead to conspire with leftist extremists from California to use their template to transplant disastrous policies from a collapsing, crime-ridden, bankrupt state of California? Maine State Representative Lori Oster, the author of Maine's now-defeated transgender trafficking bill, is on the affiliate list for the project. Voters must ask, who does she and all others on the list really work for? They're not working for the true citizens of Maine. Is it worth noting that how transgender sanctuary state laws make such a claim that this is a shield to shield families fleeing some imagined persecution in their own home state, like they're refugees from evil juntas? But it's not that that's not the only thing. It's all about the kids and the adult full custodial parent with a child wants to pursue medical gender transitioning. Then they're in a state where the service is not available. Then they can freely go to a state where they can pursue that if the parent and child agree on that. No one is chasing them around like Bonnie and Clyde. No one's refusing them for having to do this. But the only time state legislation is involving the courts and sanctuary, limiting law enforcement to response to a crime of kidnapping matters of a minor, that presents of itself is someone that doesn't have legal custody and all of a sudden they take control of the kid because they want a transgender. Well, no adult will need sanctuary to leave a state and go after another for any reason. Just ask the more than 300 Californians who fled the hellscape of California for Texas and Arizona. So I'll be right back after these messages.
No secret that the so-called mainstream media is best described as controlled propaganda. Countless news stories are either totally ignored or spun with half-truths, and because of this, essential facts and vital information are often compromised. Join Dr. Ott every Friday night on Studio B at 10 p.m. Eastern and learn why The Story Behind the Story was nominated for a Peabody Award in its second year of producing unparalleled broadcasting excellence in 1997. That is, if you really care about learning the truth.
Things were not quite right, that everything was just ever so slightly askew.
Do you have, to paraphrase Morpheus, a splinter in your mind?
If you're interested in hearing the latest information about UFOs, the paranormal,
ancient cultures and structures,
monatomic elements,
longevity,
fantastic discoveries in science,
download it to your brain,
then tune in to us. Hi, I'm Dave.
And I'm Mackie.
And we are Shiny Side Out, Sundays 2 to 4 a.m. Eastern. See you then.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
Check in every Thursday night for the Crypt Rick and Jonathan Show.
Studio A, 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here at the number one listener-supported radio station, Revolution Radio.
The Secret Kindergarten is here for the young children of the world, the best program on the radio for kids. Dealing with the most important topics in the whole universe. Fairy tales, music and movement, numbers, plants, animals, fun, colors, insects. Take care and cast your ears out to catch a story from the world of other young things. Reach out, up, under, and over. Sing a song. Talk about feelings. Just remember the magic word. The magic word is no. Step on into the Secret Kindergarten. Saturdays, 2 p.m. to 3 p.m. Eastern Time. Right here on Revolution Radio.
Are you interested in the paranormal? Murder mystery? Real natural law? Do you enjoy interviews with amazing guests? Then join Crypt Rick every Monday night, 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on Revolution Radio. Studio A, freedomslips.com. Crypt Rick's hyper thinker. Welcome to the Crypt.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Welcome back to The Master Survivor Beyond PhD, and this is your host, Dr. Johnny. Folks, all I can do is give, this is a report. I report about what's going on. I report about the trends, and you see right away that the left is trying to produce this trend to tax your animals. Any pet you have, they're going to tax. You see this trend of them trying to produce these gender-affirming, care-friendly states. So if a child wants to run away, you know, go to that state, then that state will protect them and won't report it to their parents and won't report the transition. You see anywhere that there's kids involved, like the border crossing or the FEMA, it's involved directly, like the Maui massacre. You know, all those kids that disappeared, well, the kids disappear from the border every single day. They're coming across that border. So it's a grab for our kids. It's taxing our animals any chance they get. I'm just reporting the news, folks. And you see how the trend to change the medical system is to where they're trying to make it normal for this gender-affirming prescriptions and surgeries and everything. They're trying to make it normal for the medical system to do that and mandate that. They're trying to make it normal to take vaccines, that they claim or to save your life. But no, I don't think it's to save your life. These trends that are occurring aren't for your best interest, folks, that take more of your money and to have for you to have a shorter life. And all the way that you're going through life, they're going to pick your pocket any chance they get. And, you know, I think people should have a right to the foods that they choose and the medical or treatments they want for health care. And that's why the central core of the Master Survivor Program is the Greek philosophy and medicine. The true role is not commonly accepted, though the basic concepts of health promotion have developed in the last two decades. But, you know, they have their roots in ancient civilizations, and particularly in Greek antiquity, as evident from medical and philosophical documents of the 6th and 4th centuries B.C., the ancient Greeks were the first to break the supernatural conceptions of health and disease, and had so far dominated the human societies. The ancient Greeks developed the physiocratic school of thought, realizing and maintaining good health and fighting illness depending on natural causes, that health and disease cannot be disassociated from a particular physical and social environments, nor from human behavior. Look at all those people encouraging them to become transgender. You know, everything around us affects us. Now, in this context, the Greeks define health as a state of dynamic equilibrium between the internal and the external environment. They took under consideration the physical and social detriments of health, and they empowered individuals and communities through new democracy, democratic, and participatory institutions, you know, they like these health centers that they had, and gave emphasis in health education and skill development. They recognized the importance of supportive environments and of healthy public policy, and they reoriented medicine toward a more natural and humanistic perspective. It is important to highlight such core concepts from these earlier times when you look at what's happening to our society today, a society in decay. These early times helped establish foundations for health promotion and education in our modern era, but does modern medicine actually reflect the ancient Greeks? What the ancient Greeks practiced with health? Well, Dr. Johnny says no. Dr. Johnny cries foul on the medical system today. Any doctor that took that Hippocratic oath, many of them broke it right away. Hippocrates is rolling over in his grave and appalled at what modern doctors are doing with all their poison drugs, vaccines, organ removal, and transgender surgery. Yet the biggest problem with today's people's health today is calls from toxins often associated, let's just say they have no other issues, but just eating the food that we're getting has so many heavy metals, so many additives, so many flavorings. So let's look at the heavy metals in the hair tissue mineral analysis, okay? This is what I do, folks. I'm not here to sell you pills and lotions and potions. I'm just here to get you tested. Get you tested to see what's going on in your body. The HTMA, the hair tissue mineral analysis. It's number one in my Master Survivor program. And to get the HTMA, all you got to do is go to themastersurvivor.com and click on the Master Survivor program. And then click on number one and read about the HTMA. Many questions I'm often asked is, why do we see heavy metals show up in the patient's retests when significant amounts were not originally reported in their first test? Well, heavy metals have several different storage sites in the body, and when exposure to heavy metals or metals occur, this can happen over a lifetime. The body's first response is an attempt to eliminate it from the circulation. However, there is a high exposure, a reoccurring exposure, that overwhelms the body's capability to respond in this manner. Then the metal is sequestered as much as possible. In this case, they are first sequestered in tissues or organs such as fat, you know, or the liver or the spleen or the kidneys, etc. I have some patients that, you know, that's part of their problem. You know, one had kidney stones and everything, but, you know, there's a lot of heavy metals in there too. Because lead and cadmium are bone seekers, they will eventually be transported and stored in the bones. More than 90% of the lead in the body is found in the bone. If the exposure to these metals has occurred over in the past year, or over a long time, or a year or two previously, for instance, the first HCMA may not show significant levels because it's just showing what's happening on the onset of the bloodstream and what's happening in the cells. But they will eventually be revealed as the metal is mobilized from the storage sites, because when they first start on the diet and supplement schedule, the HCMA, you know, their cells get strong and start dumping these toxins and heavy metals, and that shows up on the second report. So fluctuation of heavy metals from one test to another can indicate removal from these storage sites. Our study comparing heavy metals in dental samples to hair mineral levels illustrate the sequestering of heavy metal. Dental samples are collected along with hair samples in one comparative analysis. In the lab research that we did, we show on a graph of one study showing cadmium, lead, and aluminum, which are bone seekers, and we can see a high level found in the dental sample in the bones of the teeth. Mercury, not being a bone seeker, would not be expected to be present in a significant amount in dental or bone, since it has an affinity for soft tissue such as kidney or liver. The cadmium content of the tooth in this comparison is also 5 times the cadmium content of the hair sample, with over 30 times the lead. Studies of several other comparisons reveal similar findings. So, when heavy metals are found in HCMA test results, the recommendations of the lab report aid in removing them, and specific heavy metal elimination protocol is required. Well, you know, some doctors say, oh, well, you can get, you know, these chelation therapies, but that's not recommended. The hair tissue mineral analysis and following that diet and supplement schedule will remove it slowly but surely and not damage your body, because chelation therapy can damage or remove so many other minerals that you need. But recommendations in the report have been taken into consideration, and I built a lot of these studies back in the 80s, and that's the test that you get today. So when you order that hair tissue mineral analysis, you're getting a lot of what Dr. Johnny set up back in the 80s. The overall metabolic profile, including the heavy metal status, you know, many practitioners may place a major emphasis simply on the presence of heavy metals from the HCMA studies. However, other tissues in the mineral pattern may be much more important to deal with. For example, if a patient is showing elevated mercury in conjunction with a severe copper deficiency, a generalized chelation therapy to address the mercury is not recommended, because it may also remove copper from further exacerbating copper deficiency. In such an instance, dealing with a copper deficiency is more important than addressing the mercury exclusively. Chelation is not a good idea. This is one reason why I don't endorse chelation or heavy metal detox. Often heavy metal accumulation or retention occur due to an imbalance in the biochemistry and may be a secondary issue. Also, heavy metal removal from tissues requires an ability of the body to remove it from tissue storage sites. This is far best method. This is far best. And letting the body remove them in all the cells. These metals are not merely washed out of the tissue, but must be bound to protein lignans that attach them for mobilization and transport to excretory organs. So heavy metal detox is protein dependent. Only the right diet can do that. Detoxification is protein dependent. So the detoxification pathways, I tell a lot of my patients, hey, eat more meat, you know, and they don't understand that. And then their next report, they see all these heavy metals coming out. Well, that's because their cells got stronger. The detoxification pathway of the excretionary organ involved must be then efficient after the metal is transported to the specific site for removal. The liver is the main excretionary organ for toxic chemicals as well as excess metals, you know, cadmium and lead, excess heavy metals. The kidneys are major excretionary organs for mercury and some degree cadmium and lead. If the ability of the liver and the kidneys are insufficient, then mobilizing heavy metals from the tissue will only lead to more burden on these organs, therefore overall ability of the body to mobilize and excrete heavy metals must be addressed. This is why it's so important once you do that HTMA to have that consultation with Dr. Johnny, which is the most valuable part of that $226 that you pay for that lab report. My consultation, I'll explain fully. I'll work with you for at least an hour on explaining what that report means. Now, the comparison of daily samples to HTMA results, the hair tissue mineral analysis results, illustrates that even though cadmium was elevated in the HTMA, we would expect the cadmium level to increase as mobilization and excretion occurs. Over the course of therapy, the level of cadmium could rise and fall on subsequent tests. This is why I say every 6 months, I retest. Now, Dr. Watson, Trace Elements, that I helped start that lab, he likes to retest every 4 months, but I say, no. I like to retest all my patients every 6 months. No need to pay for a test every 4 months when you can do it in 6 months, and that gives me a better clue of what's going on and what your body's doing, how fast it's getting rid of the heavy metals, and how robust your ability is to detox. Now, all this would depend on how much percentage in storage as well as the priority of the body in mobilizing the metal in conjunction, in this case lead. You know, it may take a little longer because it's coming out of the bones, which takes longer. Eventually, we will see the level of cadmium fall to or within the below the cautionary reference interval. This, of course, would be seen with lead excretion as well, even though the lead may not have been significantly elevated in the initial HTMA. But our studies show the mobilization of heavy metals, the initial HTMA revealed in one study, a slight elevation of mercury as well as the presence of cadmium and lead. The second column shows the impact of 2 months of therapy based on the overall metabolic profile of the patient. The elevation of these metals indicate that more was present, indicated by the initial test, and then the rise of those metals in the second test. Further testing and therapy is revealed, you know, with the reduction of heavy metals in excess, the body stores, you know, is being eliminated. So we see over time that the patient eliminates more and more of their heavy metals so they don't have any more. And, of course, then they feel so much better when they don't have those heavy metals like lead in the bones and, you know, cadmium and or mercury in the tissues and the kidneys. But we show in our research the significant mineral patterns found in the patient's initial HTMA, and the second HTMA will show the new mineral pattern by only following, the therapy. And so the bottom line regarding heavy metal removal is to let the body do the removal once the patient is following the diet and supplement schedule, the HTMA. And that approach I have developed over 40 years is extremely efficient and safe in mobilizing, excreting, and detoxing heavy metals. It also allows the body to prioritize the detox of multiple heavy metals based upon the capability of each individual's unique metabolic status. Dietary recommendations and specific dietary supplement recommendations that the HTMA report is sufficient for heavy metal mobilization and removal in the majority of individuals. By balancing the individual's metabolic profile, heavy metal removal will usually occur. This process enhances the body's ability to detox rather than trying to force removal of heavy metals, which could be harmful if you do it with, you know, chelation. But let me mention a case of past heavy metal exposure. One was a lead toxicity, and then 5 years later, he reported on a case of a war veteran and presented symptoms of abdominal cramps, morning stiffness, and, you know, fatigue and so forth, and jerks, you know, progressed over a period of several years. Blood lead levels were not elevated, but symptoms of heavy metal poisoning were present. Biopsy showed abnormal mitochondria, liver, and kidney tissues. Analysis of these tissues revealed lead and uranium levels up to 100 times higher than controls. For this individual, chelation therapy to date has resulted in a removal of 12 milligrams of lead, which is 20 times higher than the amount required for toxicity, because he was in trouble. So in that case, you know, chelation was important for him to do to get that lead out of there. This study shows that blood levels of heavy metals after exposure do not adequately reflect concentration, that symptoms can persist years after exposure. In another case is lead in pregnancy. We often are asked about startling rebalancing programs during pregnancy. Some are concerned that heavy metal mobilization may occur during metabolic rebalancing. However, the fact is, even if therapeutic rebalancing is not undertaken, if heavy metals are present within the mother, they could still mobilize. The metals could come out and get into their bloodstream during pregnancy. This could affect the ongoing fetus. Reports describe instances of lead mobilization in two mothers who had ongoing and previous lead exposure. The first case involved an ongoing lead exposure in an expectant mother who was found anemic during her 23rd week of gestation. Blood lead was slightly elevated, and the mother's lead level was also elevated after the baby was delivered by cesarean section, and an infant's blood lead level was elevated as well. The source of lead was from a 15-year-old bullet fragments located in her lumbar region. Another case involved a mother who had been exposed to lead seven years prior to conception. During pregnancy, her blood lead level increased to 81 micrograms per deciliter, and the increase in lead was due to the increased bone reabsorption during pregnancy. Generally, lead and other heavy metals within the body can be present and due to previous exposures, sometimes years previously. It is essential for those who want to become pregnant to be screened for possibility of toxicities, do that hair tissue mineral analysis, and, you know, if you show elevations of, heavy metals, then it would be warranted to rebalance the chemistry in order not to only to improve their health in general, but to mobilize and excrete heavy metals prior to conception. However, from the present studies of heavy metals are found during pregnancy, it would be wise to implement therapy in order for them to be excreted, thereby reducing their exposure to the fetus. So it's very important to do this in a systematic and pragmatic way, folks. So I urge everybody, you know, to get the hair tissue mineral analysis. Just go to themastersurvivor.com and click on the Master Survivor program and click on number one. When you scroll down, number one is the hair tissue mineral. You can pay with your credit card or you can send a check for $226 to Dr. Johnny. But I need hair. I need that check. And I need you to fill out the form or at least give me your age so I can run it in the lab. Once I get that hair and that check, I'll run it in the lab, get the report back to you, and we'll have your consultation. Now, I want to tell you a little bit more about what's happening on the medical front. Dr. Dan Nades, former medical director and chief operating officer of clinical of the Cleveland Clinic Wellness Institute. Gosh, he broke down in tears, this guy, this doctor, Dr. Nan Nades, former medical director and chief operating officer of the Cleveland Clinic Wellness Institute. And in his 2017 talk on how an innocent article he wrote about vaccine safety ended his career right there. I find this talk remarkable because he was saying all the buzzwords in 2017 that came to the forefront of the popular awareness in 2021 and 2022 about how forced vaccinations violate informed consent of the Geneva Conventions, to say nothing of the Hippocratic Oath. Take a sip of water. I'd like to hope that incredibly heartfelt, I'd like to share that heartfelt contrition that Dr. Nettis expressed back then towards the patients who were harmed or killed by vaccines was a foreshadowing of the mass contrition that we need to see from medical establishment immediately. I mean, all doctors took the Hippocratic Oath, first do no harm. And I'll read you his speech. And Dr. Nettie said, and I quote, "First, I'd like to express my condolences to, I guess, little Mike, although you're not that little, but you spoke very highly of your father and to the rest of the Bailey family. I'm sorry for your loss. And while I was listening to you speak about him, I was getting choked up. I was thinking about this past week. My own father, who's retired at 77, is helping me do some work in my office, lifting 100 and 150 pound boxes and moving them around. In fact, that you had been stolen, the fact that you had been stolen of 20 of your years, I can't even imagine what my life would be like if I didn't have those 20 years. The fact that my dad is still vital, and your father, your husband, was living such a vital life, was robbed of this precious time in his life." So this is about the son of 20 years old that died from the vax. Anyway, he says, "I'm very, very simply sorry for your loss. I want to mention what lifestyle pillars are, Stephanie, because you glossed over them with what we focus on is nutrition, exercise, and stress management, stop hygiene, sleep hygiene, but the most important pillar that we talk about is we coach in our practice, which is number 5, and that is loving kindness. The ideal people being open to giving and receiving love, and I feel like this country, we've lost our way, and that way I coach so much on people recognizing is all about us human beings. We're all in this together, and we really and are truly are all one. So I want to give you a little bit of background in who I am and how I ended up being here speaking to you all." So he's given this speech. Here's a medical doctor, and he recommended the vax to some people. Didn't turn out so good, and then it really, so he came clean, and he was in tears and during half the speech. He said, "I started practicing in Cleveland Clinic in 1996 as a family doctor. I grew up in Northeast Ohio, and it was always my dream to come back and help take care of the very population in which I grew up, and my dream was met in October 28, 1996, the date I was hired, and for 17 years I practiced a traditional allopathic family doctor in Salon, Ohio, at one of the family health centers, and I had a wonderful practice. I truly adore my patients. I feel like they're family, and as part of that practice, I feel like one of the things that I was really doing was helping manage illness and not really focusing on what the root cause was, because I really didn't even understand that concept. It wasn't taught to me in medical school. Now, I really like this guy because he came clean. This was in 2017. He said in medical school we're taught a certain way, a lot of what is to identify a disease state and treat it with medication. And so, like most other providers, I was bought and sold by Big Pharma. After I obtained my MBA, I was given the opportunity of becoming chief operating officer and vice chair of Cleveland Clinic Wellness Institute in September of 2013. After being such a passionate educator, whether it was teaching medical students, residents, or importantly, my patients, I wanted to continue to educate because my passion, the local paper, the Cleveland Plain Dealer, the local paper, had asked if I would be interested in writing a monthly column to, again, help identify issues in wellness that could help people achieve a higher quality of life. So, on January 2014, I started writing this monthly column in our local paper. As a primary care doctor at the Wellness Institute, I wanted to just give you a little background about how my evolution of my practice changed. I began working side by side with some very incredible people, very passionate people who were very different from the traditional allopathic providers I was working with the previous 17 years. These people were certified in lifestyle medicine, integrated medicine, and functional medicine. And one of the first things I learned when I came to the Wellness Institute was be open to new ways of thinking, and that was an understatement. So, one of the difficulties that patients have when they see an integrative or functional medicine specialist is going back to primary care physician and sharing that experience. The primary care doctor will often do a lot of eye rolling, a lot of head shaking, a lot of disbelief in what they're being told. They've heard that from that consult. And so there's a big disconnect between the people at functional and integrative medicine are doing and what we and what people at, let's say, traditional primary care, allopathic primary care, are doing. So the providers and functional integrated medicine at the Wellness Institute were looking for primary care docs who are like-minded and who would offer their patients an opportunity to work with primary care doctor who didn't make the patient feel less than. But something interesting started to happen as I started to share these patients with these integrative and functional medicine providers. I started to see people actually get better. It wasn't just about managing chronic disease and keeping people trapped in this illness model, which is the healthcare system today that we understand and work in the United States, but people started getting off medications, started exercising at a higher level, and are truly achieving a higher quality of life. Again, like I said, I love this guy, you know, medical doctor that switched over to the true way of things are to be done. First, do no harm, just like Hippocrates wanted. This is what integrative wellness institute is doing. And so he said, as far as sharing medical record and seeing what the providers are doing in integrative and functional medicine, which was really just, you know, taking primary care to a higher level, honestly, is what all these care doctors should be doing. In my opinion, they should be adding the integrative and functional medicine to their chart, to their treatment in primary care. I started recognizing like this is something that I could do as well. And so I started picking the brains of those medical professionals and saying, you know, I'm really interested in this. Would you teach me and would you what you're doing so I could do this as well in my practice? And so for the past 2.5 years, this is from 2017, okay? So he said, for the past 2.5 years, I've really been blending functional medicine and considering into what would be considered primary care medicine. And one of the things that kind of drove me on was the role of an administrator, honestly, a level of dissatisfaction with medicine. I love my patients, and I found that when I see patients in the office, setting about 90% of an office visit was social. Where do you go on vacation? Where are your kids? What are your kids doing? What are the patients? You know, what are the patients like? I'm an easy guy to talk to. I'm friendly. I'm open. I give out my cell number, my email. You can contact me anytime, anywhere, just like Dr. Johnny. Anybody calls me, they always pick up the phone, unless I'm busy with a patient. If you don't get me, I'm busy with a patient. But you always get me. Leave a message if you call Dr. Johnny. I'll answer you, he says. It was always an interesting relationship that most of my patients don't have with their doctors, so I really enjoy sociability of the office setting, but I wasn't really moving the needle on a meaningful way, you know, starting to improve the business and toward an administrator thinking that this was the direction I needed to go in my practice. And was this starting to practice sound more like a functional medicine, starting to see my patients were improving because they were identifying with the root cause? Yes, they were identifying with the root cause. Somebody sent me a text message. Okay, good. Anyway, they said they liked my show. Well, that's nice. Okay, so anyway, continuing with Dr. Nettis. Interestingly enough, it was cellular biology, physiology, and biochemistry, the cornerstones of the first year of medical school that we can dismiss after our board exam. It's like memorization, like learning the Krebs exam. You never see it again, but after you learn the Krebs cycle, I actually referred to the Krebs cycle regularly. The fact is now being finally a correlation between what I learned in medical school in 1988 and now 1992, the practice of medicine is something that I was really yearning for. So now fast forward to 2017 in January, but I must tell you something personal that happened to me in November. I too was working for a healthcare organization that required a flu vaccine. However, I was smart enough to recognize that I could take the preservative-free vaccine and then contain thimerosal and all the aluminum, and I'd be fine. So I took the preservative-free vaccine as I was required to do my job, and then within 12 hours, so this was in November 2017. Within 12 hours, I was sick in bed with fevers and chills and muscle aches. And I was sick at home for the next 48 hours. There were 4 other people administered who took the shot and the same day preservative-free vaccine who had the exact same symptoms. So when I got back to work and we were all commiserating with each other what happened, we all got sick from taking the vaccine, I decided to look further into the vaccine and found out that even the preservative-free vaccine contains formaldehyde and aluminum. You could say preservative-free vax, call it preservative-free vax. Why? Sorry, you're putting a preservative in it. Like, this wasn't rocket science. People, this sleight of hand, it fooled me. So I got fired up and decided to start looking into other issues associated with vaccination. And I was listening to a podcast by Dr. Paul Thomas, who I feel is a hero in this story. If you don't know Paul Thomas, he's a pediatrician in Oklahoma, in Oregon, who wrote a book called Vaccine Friendly Plan. Now, I can tell you that I had this aha moment, but I think in your lives when you hear someone speak or you read a book or read an article, all of a sudden the lights go off and the light bulb goes off when you have this aha moment where something, this really resonates with you. And in this podcast, several things that Dr. Thomas said really struck me to the very core. The first one is, when he was talking about the hepatitis B vaccine, the fact that you're injecting newborns on day one with a vaccine that contains 250 nanograms of aluminum, I had absolutely no idea that was the case, and I checked into it, and sure enough, the aluminum's there. And I'm embarrassed to say that I actually, I'm most embarrassed to say that that's a fact that I personally didn't personally do my due diligence on vaccination. And as someone here who is speaking honestly to you, to the public, about what's really going on in medicine, I am culpable as any other medical practitioner, any other professional, because I didn't not do my homework when it came to vaccination. So not recognizing that we were giving high doses of aluminum the very first day, is aluminum is a heavy metal right in the vaccine. It goes straight to your brain, folks. Right in the vaccine, they give it to the little kids, the little newborns. Hepatitis B vaccine. He said, I had this aha moment, and personally, because I have children that have food allergies, I have a child with celiac, it really struck me that what I've done to my own family. The second thing, because he gave them vaccinations, okay? He knew that a lot of these problems, celiac, allergies and different things were from the vaccine, because he sees that. Second thing was, Dr. Thomas struck me with Dr. Thomas' statement that is when he developed the vaccine-friendly plan, it wasn't that he was anti-vax. He was pro-patient. He wanted to make sure he was not going to harm any patient who may be at risk because of the inability to detoxify. That was the second thing that struck me about what we need to recognize, which patients are at risk, the inability to detoxify at birth, versus that aren't, because when they get that, those heavy metals at birth, it goes right in their brain and stays in their brain, folks. Stays there. And then they develop autism, or they develop Alzheimer's, or whatever. They develop it quicker when they're older and develop autism when they're younger. So we step back and look at Dr. Thomas, what he's done, and perhaps either delay or avoid vaccination altogether, depending on particular patient's genetic risk. In January of 2017, for my article, The Plain Dealer, this was 37th article in the series I wrote in the paper. I decided to do was to take 2017 and make it a year of detoxification. He said, like I said, I love this guy. I wanted to help my patients identify what and where toxins were coming from in our environment, and then provide them with ways they could better detoxify, because we know in medicine, the major contributors of chronic disease, number one, inflammation. Number two, deficiencies in critical vitamins and minerals that all need billions of chemical reactions that are happening in our bodies every second of the day. And, and all those high heavy metals and toxins keep the ability of the body to utilize those vitamins and minerals. So the inability to detoxify is critical. So when you take inflammation deficiencies and inability to detoxify into mind, and you can see the recipes for developing chronic disease. And so, in my role in wellness and education, I really wanted to help patients, not just in Northwest and Northeast Ohio, but anybody who's reading my articles, to really help them so they could achieve a much higher quality of life. Nothing was off the table in that article, and so recognizing that we have mercury and aluminum in vaccines, amongst other preservatives, we could potentially lead to chronic disease, and I felt like it was important to discuss everything, including vaccines, so my patients could do their best and be their best advocate. It's not about whether I'm pro or anti-vaccine. I'm really about informed consent. And I want people to really understand what they're doing when they're listening to both sides, the risk versus the benefits, before they make their own decision about what to do with their lives or their children's lives. Or in the article that I wrote, discussed specifically perhaps delaying that hepatitis B vaccine until patients had more mature immune system. But the other thing that didn't really make sense to me as a provider was when I would see a pregnant patient in my practice, I had the habit of discussing with them about avoiding tuna, because we know tuna has a high mercury content in the United States, or really all over the world. So we ask them to please abstain from eating tuna fish during their pregnancy because the potential exposure to mercury. But at the same time, I'm giving them a flu vaccine that contains mercury. Wow, what am I doing? Doesn't make any sense to me. I'm being a hypocrite, he says. Now, for the people who are watching or listening to this, he says, I've been asking, well, for 2 years earlier in my column, you wrote very strongly about advocating the flu vaccine and absolutely did listen 2 years later. The whole idea of continuing education is to learn that and then take those principles and adapt them into your practice. And so, as I began to see, and you know with my own eyes, what was going on, I changed my viewpoint, and you know, I'm not a person at 30, I'm not a person at 51, I'm not the same person 2 years ago that I am today in the practice of medicine, and I hope to realize that people realize that when people, you know, when the article came out, it was mind-boggling to say the least. I can tell you the previous article that I wrote in December 2016, which was about how to stay healthy during the holidays, and it kind of had seven shares, basically kind of thought the knitting club that in Twinsburg, Ohio, was the only one reading those articles in the morning of the of January 7th when I got a phone call saying the article had been shared 20,000 times overnight. I said, wow, this is a good dialogue and it's about to happen and it's great and exactly what I was looking for. Wow, was I wrong? What I found out that what I was stepping into was a huge money trail that could potentially impact my employer and as a healthcare provider. And I hope to think that I'm being unbiased when it comes to financial or other secondary gain. And the idea is to try to figure out how to keep people healthy and to achieve the highest quality of life. And that was my intention in writing that article. In previous articles, I wrote about corruption in the sugar industry and how they paid off researchers at Harvard University in the 1960s to say that it was saturated fat that was the problem, not the sugar in the American diet, not carbohydrates. And unfortunately, it went down the wrong rabbit hole. I went after Big Pharma and the food industry and the tobacco industry without any problems associated with my employer. As soon as I hit the nerve that impacted my healthcare organization, financially, all hell broke loose for me, he said. Personally, I've been attacked everywhere. January 13th, 1 week after the article came out, I was relieved of my administrative duties after being a loyal soldier for 20 years. I was allowed to continue my practice clinically, but essentially my career at Cleveland Clinic was over. In September, they dissolved my clinic area within the Wellness Area Institute, essentially letting me go at the end of the year. I had to find other work. So these are my big issues regarding vaccines, and these are the things that I'd like to highlight. Number one is there's no education in the medical schools that I'm aware of being an educator at Clinical Cleveland Learned College of Medicine or Case Western Reserve University that I'm aware of education around vaccines or contents or safety records, informed consent, or the Safe Vaccine Injury Compensation Program. We do not discuss that in 1986, and Congress enacted legislation removing all liability from pharma-related vaccine adverse events. Like I said, this guy came clean, man. He taught it all. And I will continue. He continued. We taught about vaccines. We are taught about to memorize the vaccine schedule. Actually, I'm going to be sitting for a family medicine board this year, and I'm sure that I will have to memorize the schedule again in order to pass the exam. We don't discuss what that almost $4 billion with a B has been paid to vaccine injured patients since 1992. For medical professionals, we expect a fair balance, but vaccines seem to be absolved from the consideration. Number two, there appears to be conflict of interest regarding payments to providers for completing vaccine schedules, and corollary to that, which would be number three, patients who are being dismissed from practices because of the quote unquote vaccine safety concerns. If you you speak up, I don't want the vaccine, well then we can't help. And if you bring up a question about the vaccine, you decide not to vaccinate your children, you may be at risk from being terminated from your practice, and absolutely deplorable and disgusting, because if they let those patients go and they don't vaccinate them, it comes back on the doctors. And number four, again, with the Bailey family, I'm so sorry, but the employees are forcing employees to receive the flu and vaccine or shot or face corrective action or job loss. And the fact that your dad was 6 months from retiring is, and that's all that was left. Number five, there's a lack of informed consent, and I was one of those providers who didn't provide safety sheets before vaccinating. And I will tell the parents, those are the vaccines today. We are going to give you three vaccines in one leg and two in the other. And then after vaccinating the child or adult patient, there's your informed sheet. And again, be completely transparent with you, I had no idea there was even a mention of the compensation program or telephone number to call. Absolutely deplorable on my part, and I apologize to my patient. He's in tears telling this, folks, and he's speaking to a huge, huge public. Number six, he said the lack of transparency regarding vaccines complications and worse is being shared with their patients, and he goes on. And I'm running out of time, but you can see that he went full throttle on this. He went nuclear on, and I admire him very much because he came clean on everything. I don't have time to say everything he said, but you get the idea that he said it was because of his fault, being negligent, not telling the patient what they were getting into with some of the heavy metals in the vaccines. And this is before COVID, okay? This is now he's a big advocate against vaccines and against the COVID and all that vaccination schedule. But he knows that these neurodevelopment disorders like autism are caused by the vaccines that he gave. And some of the patients had autism right after because they were very young. And he comes clean with all that. And he took the Hippocratic Oath, but he changed his ways. He took that 180-degree turn, and Dr. Esses has now come clean, and now is he's on Dr. Johnny's side, and he's truly a hero, in my opinion. And Dr. Nettis is truly a hero, and this is going to come more and more and more, and more people across the board, across the country, are going to realize more and more that vaccines are dangerous. Okay, just the head of the WHO, one of the head researchers of the WHO, got arrested this past week, and he was the one that going to promote the new vaccine schedule coming up for the Biden administration. But he's already arrested. They already took him to the gallows, hung him, and sent a videotape of the tribunal and the hanging, and they sent that, thanks to Judge Advocate General Corp, they sent that, bless their hearts, to Geneva and to Switzerland over at the World Economic Forum and the World Health Organization there in near Geneva. In Switzerland, they sent the videotape of them hanging that guy that was going to promote the new vaccine schedules for our country for the Biden administration, okay? They sent that video of him hanging and said, this is what's going to happen to you if you start spreading vaccines and mandates and masks and 6 feet apart in the United States. This is the same thing that's going to happen to anybody that does that in the United States. So they're going to arrest them. And they've already arrested many doctors. And so the word's gotten out. So if you want a way to get rid of the vax in your body, then just think none other than Dr. Johnny. I can help you do that. Just go to themastersurvivor.com and click on the Master Survivor program and go to number one, the hair tissue mineral analysis. And number two, of course, is the, you do both one and two. And for that extra care, you know, like to get rid of the vaccine out of your body, you'll need the premium consultation. That's number three. So one, two, and three is the full Dr. Johnny program, less than $1,000 to get those vax out of your body. So join the Master Survivors today. Become a Master Survivor yourself, folks. This is Dr. Johnny, over and out. Have a good weekend.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio.
This is the people's war. It is our war. We are the fighters. Fight it, then. Fight it with all that is in us. And may God defend the right.
Warning! Warning!
We gotta stop them! They're gonna kill us all!
See how the trouble you've started?
Be they the government, be they industry, be they organized labor, be they anyone, or human beings!
The operation of the machine becomes so odious, makes you so sick at heart, that you can't take part. You can't even passively take part. And you've got to put your bodies upon the gears and upon the wheels, upon the levers, upon all the apparatus, and you've got to make it stop. And you've got to indicate to the people who run it, to the people who own it, that unless you're free, the machine will be prevented from working at all.
Revolution Radio of FreedomSlips.com, the number one listener-supported talk radio station, throwing ourselves upon the gears of the machine. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
You called down the thunder, well now you've got it.
Hey, you tell them I'm coming, and hell's coming with me, you hear? Hell's coming with me!
Revolution Radio!
I am Bill Johnson. Some consider my efforts to be an underground law school. I am not an attorney, and I do not give legal advice. I teach. That's lawful and legal. Consider yourself served. You are to appear Friday evenings, 8 p.m. Eastern, Studio A. My forte? Foreclosure and contract law. Grab your legal pad and pen. Learn a broad spectrum of law spanning administrative, criminal, family, tort, and federal law. Fools and losers.